Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. We're going to start with some articles from AARP, the magazine, under the heading, we'll start with one of Money Saver, How to Find the Best Money Advisor. It's the one who fits your unique needs and your budget. A good financial advisor can spare you from making costly mistakes, coach you through getting out of debt, help you preserve your or grow your money, or help you prepare for retirement, which means every household would benefit from having one. But the best advisor for your friend or brother-in-law isn't necessarily the best advisor for you, says Greg Ward, director of a think tank at Financial Finesse, which works with employers to educate workers on finances. It depends on your needs. If you want help investing a sum you've inherited, the best advisor might be different than if you want a retirement income plan or have questions about long-term care. Take these steps to zero in on a good match. Learn the landscape. Consider what kind of advice you're looking for, because that will lead you to the category of advisor to seek out. Are you simply looking for someone to handle your investments, to tell you what stocks, bonds, or funds to buy? In that case, you might look for a broker, also known as a registered representative, who focuses on buying and selling those investments and other securities on your behalf. Another option is what's known as a registered investment advisor, RIA, who might offer, along with investment advice, broader financial advice covering subjects like taxes, budgeting, and estate planning. Those two types overlap with each other. Some advisors are both brokers and RIAs, and also overlap with another type of professional, a financial planner. Those planners who may or may not offer investing advice can guide you in areas such as creating a budget, determining your insurance needs, saving for retirement, and other long-term goals. And other professionals might have a more specific focus, say, counseling you if you're struggling with debt. Narrow your search. Along with checking out one of the major brokerage firms or banks, you can look for advisors and planners through industry trade groups like the Financial Planning Association, PlannersSearch.org, and the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, NAPFA.org. Each has a member directory that you can search by geographic area and particular specialty. And don't rule out word of mouth from people you trust as long as those advisors have the expertise you need. To help screen names, look for advisors who have earned designations through coursework, exams, and ongoing education. One of the most common for pros who offer broad financial advice is the Certified Financial Planner, CFP. A directory of advisors who have earned that designation is at letsmakeaplan.org. Other titles include Chartered Financial Consultant, CHFC, and Certified Public Accountant, /Personal Financial Specialist. That's CPA/PFS. Beyond those are specialty designations that indicate an advisor's deeper dive into a particular area, such as planning for someone with special needs or advising someone going through a divorce. Not all of these special areas require rigorous study, so don't assume an alphabet soup after a pro's name is proof of financial wizardry. Prepare for the costs. Advisors get paid for their services in a variety of ways. A broker might charge commissions on transactions or a percentage of assets in an account. Fee-based advisors charge a percentage of assets, but may also receive income from other sources, like a sales commission from the company whose annuity you buy. Other advisors are fee-only. Their compensation comes only from you and not from any third party. Many fee-only advisors cater to clients who want ongoing financial advice, typically for an annual charge of 0.05% to 2% of the assets that they manage. Some advisors will charge a flat fee for their work on a specific problem you bring them. For people who want one-time or occasional help, some advisors, such as those affiliated with the XY Planning Network, xyplanningnetwork.com, may charge by the hour, say $200 to $400. Any of these arrangements can be appropriate if they match your needs. For minimizing conflicted interesting advice or investing advice, a fee-only setup might be best. But for occasional trades, a commission could be the least expensive way to go. If these options are unaffordable, you may have some free alternatives. Do you have a 401k or a 403b plan through your workplace? Check with your human resources department to see whether you have access to free investment advice through your retirement plan provider. FEC Public, a nonprofit that works with community organizations and local governments, offers free advisory services to help with basic issues such as budgeting, debt negotiation, and establishing a savings plan. To see if there is an office near you, go to fecpublic.org/find-FEC. Some members of the Financial Planning Association offer pro bono help through local chapters. For chapter contact information, visit 1fpa.org. That's F as in Frank, 1fpa.org. And click on networking, then on chapters. For free or low-cost debt counseling, consider the National Foundation for Credit Counseling, nfcc.org, or the Financial Counseling Association of America, fcaa.org. Interview your final picks. A good advisory relationship rests on trust and communication, which are best assessed with a face-to-face meeting, either by video or in person, Ward says. So, talk to two or three advisors who feel right for you. This is when you find out about the abstract stuff, like personality, connection, and your gut feeling, which is important, he says. When you explain your financial challenges or goals, and yes, you should be fully open about your situation, ask what kinds of solutions they've employed in similar circumstances. During your conversation, post a couple of questions about a product or concept. This will help you understand if they are willing to take time and can explain things clearly. If you get a whiff of impatience or arrogance, that's not a good sign, Ward says. Search track records. Even if an advisor seems trustworthy, be sure to do a background check. You can look up an RIA's record on the Securities and Exchange Commission's Investment Advisor Public Disclosure website, advisorinfo.sec.gov. That record will detail any previous troubles with securities regulators. Brokers are regulated by the Financial Industry Regulation Authority. You can search a broker's name in FINRA, F-I-N-R-A's database, brokercheck.finra.org, to find any violations. You can check a CFP's background on the CFP board's website to ensure an advisor is eligible for the designation. And finally, put yourself first. Finally, you might assume all advisors are required to put your interests before their own and disclose any conflicts of interest. In other words, to act as fiduciaries. That's not the case. Only RIAs who are registered with the SEC or their state are obligated by law to act as fiduciaries when working on investments. If you want assurance you're getting conflict-free advice, ask advisors if they are committed to the fiduciary standard. Harold Evansky, a founder of Evansky & Katz, Folds Wealth Management in Coral Gables, Florida, suggests getting assurance in writing. If they won't sign, that may be a sign you should walk away, he said. This article was by Karen Hube, who's a veteran financial writer and a contributing editor for Barron's. And here's a sidebar article. One payoff, peace of mind. Working with an advisor can mean greater confidence about one's finances, according to a recent study. So we have three categories here. Average certainty on a scale of 1 to 100 about my ability. 2. Manage my debt. People who don't work with a financial planner, 61. People who do work with an advisor, 80. Afford health care. If you don't work with an advisor, 58. And if you do, 78. Plan for retirement. No help, 55. Help, 77. Cover a financial emergency. No help, 53. Help, 78. Now we have a series of articles of advice that are entitled, This is 70. Up your frame game. A trio of old trends can give you a fresh look. And these are glasses frames. So circular logic. The distinctive circles favored by John Lennon are back. Find wire rim styles like Ray-Ban's J-Joe Optics, Ray-Ban.com, or Simon, WarbyParker.com. Missoni is a lower cost option at smartbuyglasses.com. Then there's So Square. Think Jackie Onassis or on a yacht. Big, dramatic frames are well suited for progressive lenses. Consider Malcolm, Dexter, or Cadre. Zeelool.com. That's Z-E-E-L-O-O-L.com. And Cadus D28RX. At CadusLife.com. And finally, we have the cat eye. The cat eye flatters most female faces. Marilyn Monroe gravitated to ornate versions. Contemporary options include Tilly by WarbyParker.com and Versace's Cat Eye 3286 at FramesDirect.com. Then we have Catching Up with Janice Ian. Last year, Janice Ian, 72, racked up her 10th Grammy nomination, 55 years after her first one, for the Light at the End of the Line. She also announced it would be her final album. Question. One of your best-known songs is At 17. How is 72-year-old Janice different from 17-year-old? Answer. I'm a lot braver. The first time I was consciously brave about my work was with At 17, when I sang it with my eyes open. It's such a personal, vulnerable song, and I was waiting for people to laugh at me. It was a huge shock to realize that instead of laughing, they were weeping. Question. With The Light at the End of the Line, you've said, I'm not calling this retirement, it's rewiring. What does that mean? Answer. For me, retiring means I'll sell my catalogs. I'll write books. I'll stop doing so much business and be able to be more creative. Question. What drives you? Answer. You can't stop. If you stop, you're dead. The key issue is not a set of numbers. It's what's going on in your heart and your brain. So as long as the heart beats and the brain moves forward, you're not old. And this was as told to Alana Nash. Now, under the heading of family, what I wish I'd known before becoming a caregiver. There's no roadmap for navigating your way through the experience of caregiving for a spouse, and it will be different for everyone. But here are some very practical things I wish I had known beforehand. Be there for every hospital stay. Hospitals are understaffed. Things fall through the cracks. More than once, I marched a meal tray out to the nursing station after my husband, a diabetic, suffered suffering from heart disease and kidney failure, was given a meal of forbidden foods. Or the doctor who changed a medication order but forgot to sign it. No one noticed until I asked. Learn the terrain. Be there at dawn for morning rounds and get to know the nurses you'll need to deal with. Hospitals keep temperatures frigid to help slow bacterial and viral growth. So bring warm clothes. Your spouse will be kept warm, but you're on your own. Accept help. You don't get extra credit for doing it alone. When friends offer to form a meal train or a neighbor volunteers to walk the dog, just say yes. If someone asks what you need, tell them honestly and specifically. A friend stood guard over my husband while I strolled the aisles of Target buying nothing. I called it practicing self-care. And this article was by Anne Brenoff. Now let's look at redefining what makes a relationship in our 70s. A great part of getting older is you can make up the rules. And this is by Eleanor Lipman. At my age, the term boyfriend is too cute. And when applied to Jonathan, it's most inadequate. We met on Match.com when I was 60 and he was 58. First came our G-rated nomance. When time off, then a reunion. The night he announced he didn't want to be just friends anymore, he confided a worry that women he had dated after his divorce eventually asked, "Where is this going?" "Ha," said I, "widowed after 34 years of marriage, you've come to the right place." 10 years in, we both feel as committed as two unmarrieds can be. We live in separate Manhattan apartments, a mile apart, on a bus route that brings us from door to door. We spend weekends together, 60 miles north of Manhattan, in a house on a lake, and we were isolation mates there during the pandemic. Whether cohabitating for 18 COVID-conscious months or just on weekends, it works. He is excellent company, an excellent listener, cheerleader, bedmaker, and appreciator of my cooking. He sets the table and does the dishes. He is a neatnik, but in the best way. He notices grime where I don't. I remember looking out the window in awe, watching him hose down the chrome canisters that held the toilet brush and the plunger. I know some couples believe that sharing hobbies and sports is crucial. Not us. If Jonathan announces he's going on a hike, I say, "Fine, enjoy." We share the same values, the same religion, the same politics, and the same view of wall-to-wall togetherness. It's overrated. Do I mind that this ex-Liverpoolian can watch soccer matches all weekend? Not at all. When I disappear to write, does he mind being left to his crossword puzzles, his books, his own work? No. If there's a secret to our success, I think it's this. Love between two reasonable people who appreciate their comfortable proximity. Back in the city, we have a standing Wednesday night date. When not together on other weeknights, we have cocktails via FaceTime. If Liverpool has a weeknight match, we watch in tandem, remotely, and text our commentary. He is my partner, my significant other, my confidant, and my emergency contact. I coach him from time to time. If one of us was in the hospital, who do you say you are? Your husband. Correct. Just as I would say, I'm his wife. Is anyone going to demand a marriage license? I think not. Early on, inviting him to some future event, I would add coyly, that is, if we're still together. To which he would always say, "I'm not going anywhere." He still says that, but now it's to make me laugh, mocking the early days when I was afraid to take endurance for granted. 9 years ago, a neighbor stopped me in the lobby of our building after one of Jonathan's visits. He said, grinning, "When you two saw each other, your faces illuminated and you both lost 15 years. This is the real thing." Thank you, kind and observant neighbor. Thank you, life and your cosmic algorithms. Thank you, Jonathan, because years later, All that we have fashioned is still the real thing. Eleanor Lipman, 72, is the author of 16 books of fiction and nonfiction, most recently the novel Misdemeanor, published by Harper Perennial. Now, continuing to look at This Is 70 in AARP, the magazine, reviving old passions. Want to instantly erase the decades? Restart an old hobby. And this is by Candy Shulman. I hopped back in the saddle, the cycling kind. I dusted off my bicycle, bought a new helmet, and off I rode. I had forgotten the exhilarating feeling of the wind on my face. Experiencing it again was a joy. The confidence I felt at rediscovering a skill was intoxicating. Melissa Kirsch, author of The Girl's Guide to Absolutely Everything, wrote in the New York Times. Kirsch returned to skiing, which led her to consider taking up the clarinet again. It's easy to fall into a trap of thinking we know ourselves, she wrote. It keeps us safe, convinces us we don't require novelty, that we're finished or nearly finished works. It's not true, but sometimes we need reminders. Anita Isola's family hiked together when her son was a child. Now, 73, on weekends, Isola walks for hours in the woods of the Hudson Valley. I call the walks nature baths, she says. It's crucial. I do it alone. I want to hear just birds, leaves, and wind. It makes me feel emotionally refreshed, less burdened. Nature can reduce stress and improve your mood, research shows, but indoor hobbies also have benefits. Deborah Davis studied dance from age 6 to 16. She put on tap shoes again at 70 and started taking classes, first in person and now on YouTube. I feel a rush of excitement and the joy of movement, she says. The music takes over. I feel 12 years old again. Kate Walter abandoned her guitar because she struggled to tune it. At a Christmas dinner in New Jersey, her grandniece showed her Guitar Tuna, an app that pings when an instrument's strings are tuned. It spurred Walter to buy herself a ukulele for her 74th birthday. It's relaxing, especially in winter when I'm indoors. She strums and sings to Hank Williams and Creedence Clearwater Revival. Retirement is a perfect time to discover activities. Fred Sachs, 77, played ping pong as a teenager and young adult. I didn't have the opportunity to play for over 40 years, he said. Vacationing in New Jersey, he and his friends went to the condo ping pong room in the afternoons, playing up to 5 days a week. We felt like youngsters again, he said. It's a nice workout and it's fun. I enjoyed winning again. And kickstart your taste buds. Start a party in your mouth. Sometimes the spice of life doesn't seem quite as piquant after 70. We asked chefs who specialize in cooking for older palates about tricks to create big flavors. Sweeten your savory. Our ability to taste sugar lasts as we age, says Tom Sharkus of the Kulin Art Group in Stamford, Connecticut. Try sweet spins on savory dishes, coconut shrimp and chicken marinated in honey and garlic. Skip salt. Acids, including citrus zest, lemon or lime juice, and vinegar are great substitutes for salt and can boost flavor, says Guy Hemond of Benchmark Senior Living in Waltham, Massachusetts. So when marinating chicken, use pepper, garlic, and oil, but swap in lemon for the salt. And consider turmeric. Turmeric could be your best friend. Hemond said he uses it on chicken, pork chops, and to season cauliflower, rice on a low-carb alternative. And use fresh herbs. Fresh basil, rosemary, parsley, or sage can be a good place to start, says Steve McCracken of the Buckingham in Houston. Now, let's look at a few items from AARP The Bulletin under the heading of How to Stay Safe This Summer. Even though it's almost over, we still have some warm days left. Sunburn. Use a broad-spectrum sunscreen with a sun protection factor, SPF, of 30 or higher. But don't make the biggest sunscreen mistake, thinking it lasts all day. Reapply it every 80 to 90 minutes, sooner if you swim or sweat. Even better, wear clothing with an ultraviolet protection factor, UPF, number on the label, a broad-brimmed hat, and sunglasses. Staying out of the sun from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. will also help. Call your doctor for severe burns with blisters, fevers, chill, confusion, or nausea. Getting lost on a hike. With its built-in map, compass, and GPS, your smartphone may be your best friend on a hike. But it also has a battery and requires a wireless signal. Relying on it alone could turn your outing from bad to disastrous, so carry an old-fashioned compass and learn how to use it. Ditto for a paper map or printed trail guide. Always let someone know where you're going into the woods and what time you expect to come out. Stay on marked trails. Seriously, do not step off the trail for any distance, at any time, for any reason. Poison ivy is thriving thanks to rising soil temperatures and carbon dioxide in the air. If you think you've been exposed to poison ivy, use soap and water to wash body parts have come in contact with it, and wash your clothing and any tools you've used, since a skin irritant released by poison ivy, poison oak, and poison sumac can cling to items for years. Treat mild cases with topical hydrocortisone and calamine lotion. If the rash is severe, spread over a wide area or intensely itchy, see a doctor, who will most likely prescribe topical or oral steroids. And when shots are fired, an office, a mall, a library, shootings can happen anywhere. Active shooter situations are often over in minutes before law enforcement can arrive, so prepare yourself with these recommendations from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Run. If leaving is possible, plan an escape route and flee, regardless of whether others agree to follow. Hide. If evacuation is not possible, find a place to conceal yourself. It should be out of view. Fight. Take action against the shooter only as a last result. Throw items and improvise weapons in an effort to disrupt and incapacitate the shooter. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.